We're going to be in Titus again tonight, and chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. And I want to try to spare some words and get to the heart of this as quickly as I can, but I really want us to have a perspective as we get into it of your neighbor. I've entitled this message, Change Yourself, Then Change Your Neighbor. The reason I think that's important is because I'll give you a little anecdote. I went to visit my dad in the Sundance Villa at New Braunfels. He's recently had a setback in health, and he suffers from some dementia and some Parkinson's. And while he remembers us, he doesn't remember much relevant or recent. And I told him that I was his best-looking child, and he said, "Well, I remember that much. You aren't." And I said, "Well, what I'm going to do is get a picture of me and paste it on your mirror so that when you shave, you'll at least see something beautiful once a day." And he goes, "That won't be necessary." And I said, "Oh, it's necessary, all right, because he's not a good-looking guy like me." I thought about that for a second, and thinking about, you know, what we see when we look at other people, what we see when we look in the mirror, and I'm not going to be too profound, but I think we all understand that if we're going to change anything, the first place to change is ourselves. You know, if we really want to affect change in others, if we really want to, in the right heart, affect change in anyone else, we probably need to start with ourselves. And I read through all the readings I was doing this week that said the luckiest person is a person who hasn't much of that evil to unlearn. And they said that a child who accepted Christ early in their life and was trained up in that way didn't have to give up much of the ugly to put on the good. And I was going, "Well, you haven't been where I live. You know, I've seen some mean little kids out there, and they're saved." But I do look at that and I go, boy, we all need to change just a little bit. And in this book of Titus, God was very, very careful in getting to this point. He said in chapter 1, "My church is precious. I'm going to send you godly leaders, and you need to work under their authority." In chapter 2, he said, "You know, I want you to be this way with other people in the body. I want you to be wise. I want you to be sensible. I want you to take care of the way you interact with people." And he talked about the older, the younger, the slaves or the employees. He said, "In the body, I want you to act like this." In chapter 3, he goes, and now we shift our focus, the Christian in the world. And I can tell you, I've got a couple of neighbors I would really like to see change. And I'll bet you anything, my neighbors are saying the same thing about me. The same thing about me. I've told you I have, what are the people on the left, Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons? Yeah, and then on the other side are Muslims. I mean, it's a smorgasbord of religions, you know. And I'm sure down the street, it's something totally different. And, you know, I don't want to change Vasti and Gaudiya, the Indian people, but I want to change their perspective about who Christ is. I really want to do that. And Reuben and Imelda, I don't want to change Reuben and Imelda. I want to change their perspective about who Christ is. I really want them to do that. And the only way I have to do that is by living a life worthy of following to the cross. Really, that's all I've got. I can talk to their children. I can wave at them. We can meet on the street. We can do a lot of things. But I'm going to focus on me. You know, what have I got to change about me? And I think these things right here that we're going to go through in Titus chapter 3, verses 1 through 3 are really important. I'm going to tell you that I'm going to do the second half of I'm going to do another lesson, sermon on this in a couple of weeks after the business meeting to finish off this passage. But I want to go over what I think we're going to see here in changing yourself is your duty. This is number one. There are 4 points. Your duty, D-U-T-Y, duty. Your former condition as a sinner. And then your salvation and your mission. Those are 4 things that I want us to see in this passage of 8 verses. I'm going to do the first 3 tonight. The first I'm going to cover is your duty to change yourself and to remind you of your former condition as a sinner, who you used to be. And I want you to start right here with me. Look back. And Carolyn, you're kind of a little bit of a middle-aged lady. you got a few years behind you where you've been with Christ, and you can look back when you started with Christ and go, here I am. And probably in humility you're going, man, I haven't moved that far. But with some, just some wisdom, you've gone, man, how far have I come from that day? How far have I come from a child to now? Not just physically, not age, but in sanctification. And I think Kathy's going to be doing a Sunday night service teaching time. It is you, right? That's going to, on sanctification. And we're going to see what work God has done in us and what we've lent ourselves to and how God's changed us. That's what I'm talking about. That's you changing. You from the inside, God from the outside changing you. So as we go through this, I want us to remember that passage in our life. My daughter was saved Sunday morning. Holy smokes. Big stuff. Big stuff. So in terms of new Christians, she's got about 72 hours under her belt, right? And she's got about 15 years before that. Some of them weren't easy. Some of them weren't easy. But boy, how proud are we? I'm so proud. And I had to throw that in somewhere, but I am going to say that. She's going to look back on this day just like every one of you look back on your day of salvation and go, how far I've come, how far I have to go. But the purpose is to change the neighbor to Christ. You can't do it on your own. But here we go. Let's get into the verses. Titus 3, verses 1 through 3. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. For we also once were foolish ourselves, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another. Okay, if you don't see the 7 points that are in here, the really cool thing is to read a lot of commentaries and do that. But there are things that are our duty as Christians. If we're going to be out there and we're going to be changing, not the world, I don't know what sounds more vainglorious. I want to change the world. You and I have tried versions of that, and it's pretty hopeless. And it really doesn't lead to much. But if I say I'm going to change myself to change others, to lead them to Christ, that sounds somewhat doable. Because then you have the Holy Spirit within you. You have Christ working on you and through you, however you want to say it, to change you. So your duty is to, as we go through that verse 1, it starts out a really cool list. It says, submissive to rulers and authorities. Marjorie, what country are you going to be going to next week? What kind of country is that? Is that like a democracy where everybody gets a vote and it's peaceful all the time? And I mean, what kind of country is it? I mean, they have great food. They have a king. Parliament? Is there civil unrest? Is there any danger in going over there? Okay. And Katie's going to go to Kenya in a couple of months. And Elena went to Manchuria. Is that where you went? Where are you, Elena? Where'd you go? China. Is it safe to be a Christian there all the time? Yeah, well, good. Well, here it's very safe to be a Christian, because we're perceived as totally worthless. You know, we really are. If we were in a country where Christianity was frowned upon, say a Muslim country, and we know a missionary who lives in a Muslim country, and it always surprises me about how his emails home sound. It's like, yeah, we had to move. We had to set up a new office. Kids got sick. And I go, sounds like here. I never hear him say, people are saved. But over there, his effort is years to see a Muslim saved. Years to see a Muslim saved. It doesn't sound like it's very risky. It just sounds like it's a lot of work. But there are countries where you can lose a very important part of your body for spreading Christianity, your head. And while mine's grown attached to me, I hope I haven't grown attached to it so much so that I wouldn't share the gospel if I were in a country that would take my head for it. But we aren't there, and it isn't good to go to all the extremes, but Submissive to rulers and authorities can mean anything from being here where we're somewhat perceived as, I'm going to say, insipid. We're not thought of as a real threat culturally, and that's probably good. But if I were next door neighbors to somebody in it who was influential, or a man next door who works at a convenience store, he might perceive me as a threat if I were a totally radical Christian. He might perceive me as some kind of a dangerous person to be around. Because if he becomes a Christian, there's probably all kinds of ramifications from his family and his culture. So I want us to understand that we have a duty to be submissive to rulers and authorities, and we have a duty to be obedient. And what is obedient? Everybody gets it. My kids know. I know. I don't always like being obedient, and I always wonder who I'm supposed to be obedient to. But I'm going to blend those together and say there are authorities over us. If my government tells me I can't share the gospel, what's the Christian's proper response to that? Anybody? Marty, you got an answer? Do what? You want to say that with a deeper voice? Share the gospel. Okay, wait a minute. Marty's going to jail. And Marty's not going to be submissive to rulers and authorities. Marty, are you wrong or right? Okay, yeah, there's the time and a place to not submit to a ruler and authority, and that's where God has told you something clearly different. Do you guys know when those times are? Well, that's it. I mean, Marty gave you one of the few exceptions. And the guys in Acts that were just getting beat from one town to the next were either the dumbest guys alive or the most passionate followers of Christ ever. You can tell me not to do it, but as I leave bleeding and dragging my friend with me, I'm going to be telling them that God saved me from you. And oh, by the way, there's this other thing you need to know that will save you too. Boy, that's powerful. But if I'm going to be submissive to rulers and authority, I'm going to be obedient. Another duty I have is to be eager. I call this eager, ready for every good work. I don't even know what that is. I mean, these are, you've seen the bumper sticker, and I kind of always look at it and go, what's that? What's that? Random acts of kindness? Yeah, don't you? Denise and I are on such the same page. I'm going, if it's random, I mean, where is the glory of God? If it's random, it's about me and how I feel right now. It really is about that. So this eagerness to do good works, and I don't know what those are all the time, but I've watched my kids go through Boy Scouts, and I've watched the youth here go to adults' houses and clean and rake leaves, and I'm going, those are good works. They weren't always eager, don't get me wrong, but I was eager to take them so that they would learn the lessons. But That's a mindset. That's an attitude of kindness. And that's still within the realm of whatever organization or government or country you find yourselves in. Wow. And the next one is, it says, malign no one. I'm reusing my own words. It says to malign no one in the beginning of verse 2. And if I'm standing on the street corner like I was last night, and was it last night or the night before, we met two of our new neighbors. And the golf pro was the husband, and the mom was, I could never figure out what her job was. She told me, but her kids were circling her like Indians around a wagon train. And I thought, she's going down soon. But the dad was over there just, boy, every other word was a cuss word. And I was going, I had to look around. Who's in the neighborhood besides his two kids? And I was going, I started to think bad thoughts about that guy. And then the next thing I was going to say is, we're going to have to leave this guy and standing in the street, you know, make up an excuse to leave. But maligning someone is the actual words we say. It is the words we say. And I want us to be careful about the words that we do say, because they are evidence of what's in the heart. And people listen. And we say them when we think no one's listening. The next one was peaceable. It says to be peaceable. I am the most peace-loving man I know. So I got nothing to say about this one. But Our pastor nearly dropped a guy on the boardwalk or the river walk a few months back just for looking at his daughter crossways. Are there times to not be peaceable? I guess this is not what he's talking about. Peaceable is another intentional part of the will, to not be in conflict with people, to be gentle. Well, that's amazing. Gentleness is a pretty hard won commodity around here, because literally you can sit on any street corner and just watch while you're waiting to cross, and people are not gentle. They're not nice. They're in a hurry. They're busy. And the next one is gentle again. But then number seven is consider for all men. And showing every consideration for all men is how it says in the American Standard. Showing every consideration for all men. And I think these are such obvious symbols of humble and meek people. Humble people are people who don't need to be broken. They've broken themselves. Meek people are people who have authority and strength and who withhold the use of that. I mean, those are people, in my mind, that could rebel and choose not to. They could be just like the rest of the world, but they choose to bend the knee, to bow the head to God first, to be obvious, a symbol to their neighbors. And I love it that we are looking different in the world. But are you different enough that people can tell it? You know, I'm going to say that I'm very conscious of this. I'm also going to say I'm very unconsciously the biggest sinner there is. I have a quote, and a lot of you guys have heard this, especially people in the military might have heard this, and you tell me where this came from. Duty is the most sublime word in our language. Do your duty in all things. You cannot do more. You should never wish to do less. Do anyone know who that is from? I'll read it again and maybe it'll come to you. Who? Very close. An apple for Mr. Dorsey. Duty is the most sublime word in our language. Do your duty in all things. You cannot do more. You should never wish to do less. That was General Robert E. Lee. Wow. I really admire this guy, because he is a Christian man who rebelled against authority on conscience. But he paid for it in his conscience. But he did a good job. And I've always been attracted to that statement, because this is the Christians. Motto. If you can't find a verse in the Bible that says this is what I should be, if he hasn't read Titus 3, 1 through 3, he can go to Robert E. Lee and say duty is the most sublime word in our language. You have something to do. You should do it. You have someone to be. You should be it. You shouldn't think of being anything less. Robert E. Lee gets it. Been dead, what, about 150 years? He gets it. We should. There's a real life application here from these verses. He says, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be a peaceable gentle, showing every consideration. He says, remind them. Have you guys heard anything new tonight, except the Robert E. Lee quote? Have you? Have you heard anything new? Be gentle, be kind, be eager to do good works. Somebody has told you this before. Your kindergarten teacher, your pastor, your mother has screamed it at you when she's throwing a vacuum cleaner at you. My mom did. So this is nothing new. This is remind you to do what you already know to do. We already know to do this. The other side of that is hypocrisy. We know to do it and we choose not to, and we say we are doing our best. But the question I have for you is, what impact would you have on your lost neighbors if you could put on these good behaviors consistently? If you could change you, what impact would you have on your neighbors? And that's what this version of the church today, this little part of God's church, is supposed to do. I had a quiz in my mind. I wanted somebody to give me book, chapter, and verse about what the role of the church today is. Does anybody have one of those? You work on that while I'm going through this next few things, because I want you to know what the role of the church is. Because I can go almost anywhere and think peaceful thoughts and act obedient. But this is overt behavior. This is going outside of my nature and putting on something totally different. So you tell me what the church's role is, and I'll get to why that's relevant. But the next part of this is remember your former condition. In verse 3:3 it says, "For we also once were foolish ourselves, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another." I heard a guy once reading off one of these lists of the famous sins. You know, they're in several places in the Bible. And they say, don't do this. And he literally names 7 or 8 hardcore sins. And you go, man, I never even thought of that. And it does teach, hey, we now know. We now know because there is teaching. We now know because the conscience has been awakened. But I don't know how to be all these things. I know how to be all these. I will say that. But some of these other sins, I've never thought of adultery. I've never thought of homosexuality. I've never thought of those sins. Those are not normal to me, but I'm aware of them now from reading the Bible. That is common to man. The lust for sin is common to man. Maybe all, not all of them, but some of them. Now these, I want us to go through those kind of quickly because there's only a couple I want to dwell on. Foolish. It says in verse 3, we were once foolish ourselves. And that's what I asked a while ago. Do you remember back an hour and a half before you were saved, who you were then and who you are now? Boy, the fool says in his heart there is no God. You know, and then an hour and a half later he says, oh, you're God. And you cry out and you say, I must have you. And foolishness is also paired with being morally bankrupt. Morally bankrupt. Not just bad behavior like, Lord, I didn't know that. I didn't think about that. It's like you'd choose the bad things without care for the consequence. That's foolish. Disobedience, just the opposite of obedient. And we're talking about the culture and the government structure you live in, the place you work, the all the institutions you are a member of, disobedient. Here's another one, deceived. Do you guys think of yourselves? Sometimes I get outside of myself and I look at me and I go, who's that little handicapped man? I go, wow. I go, that's me. That's me. I don't even recognize myself anymore. Sometimes I look at myself and I'm changed. Sometimes for the better. But there's a sense of looking at somebody and seeing that they don't see reality. They don't see reality at all. I mean, I blink and hold my eyes closed and I think of the whole realm of the spirit world and the world I live in and eternity, and I don't grasp it all. Please, if you get it, give me the 5-minute version because that's about all my little brain can handle. But I close my eyes and I go, there's a war in heaven for who's going to be supreme. The crazy part about it is it came to earth and now it's asking the very same, will I be supreme in your life? And the people who are deceived don't have that question asked of them. They don't think about that. They are deceived. They don't know who reigns supreme in their lives. They don't. Because if you are not for Christ, you are His enemy. And people don't care about that very much. They really don't. I'm shocked that we see it and they don't sometimes. We just look at our little spiritual selves and go, my God, they don't see it. They don't see it. These people are deceived, and it's not something to hate them for or anything like that, but it is one of those things where you go, how can it be that you chose me? Jesus, how can it be that you chose me and not this really nice couple next door with 2 sweet little kids who just happen to be Muslim? How can it be? And I'm going to stay where I am. The next one, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures. I'm going to just say Starbucks, chocolate cake, fast women, too much wine. This could be anything. This is the people that are living in the world. Living in the world. It's hideous. Denise and I were just talking about, you know, something I really struggle with is watching people letting loose on their lusts. And I'm talking about Christians too. That's a horrible sight. But the world, I expect it of them. I expect, literally, when I drive down the road, I expect unchristian people to throw beer cans out the window and run over people in intersections. Somehow I expect them to be radically awful. Because I expect Christians to be radically good. But the thing is, I can't always tell a Christian from a non-Christian because, you know, we don't always act different. But listen to all these characteristics of the unsaved person, the lost person. He's foolish, he's disobedient, he's deceived, he's enslaved. He's spending his life on malice and envy. Malice means hate, hateful deeds. Envy means cursing someone for what they have that you don't. To the point where you might want to take it from them by force. That's pretty tough. Hateful and hating one another. Man, if you see yourself in here, I'm not going to challenge whether you're saved or not, but I'm challenging whether you've changed yourself enough to be a radical pinpoint of light for the world. I don't expect anything of the lost, y'all. I really don't. I don't expect them for them to cry out for the Lord. I don't expect them to bow their knee or their head. I'm thinking about my haircut, I guess. But I don't expect much of the lost. But I expect God to draw the lost to his people. And I expect the people to be ready. I really do. I love it that Marty and Perry Ann made some little bookmarks. I have like 20 of them in my books. And I keep thinking, one of these days, somebody's going to want me to go through the Romans Road to Salvation, and then I'll go, oh, wait, I've got it memorized, but it's great to have a little prop to give them when I'm done. And then it's good to know that my son, Jesse, used it sharing the gospel with somebody just the other day. I don't even know where that bookmark is here. I had 20 of them today. But I want the world, when they finally are drawn to us by the Holy Spirit, to find us worthy of the Spirit within us. I really want us to be different. And that's what Titus is telling us here, is that Paul really was saying, put on these new habits, take off these old. And he's really even going past that and saying, you shouldn't have any of these because you are now indwelt by the Holy Spirit. God is sanctifying you. God is working miracles in you. Miracles in you, because remember where you were? Remember where you were then? I was saved at the age of 13. It's a long time ago. And I look back and go, who was I? I was ashamed. I was ashamed of who I was. I knew that much. I knew that much. I didn't know then what I know now. And that's that I would be one day proud. So proud to be called of Christ. And then so grateful that I would be, my lust would be to share the gospel somehow. I didn't know then, but I can see it now. Who were you at the age of 13 or 17 or 8 or whatever it was when you were saved? Who were you before that? Look at you now. And you may not be moving very fast, but the role of this church is to grow up people like that. Is to equip people for evangelization, for sharing the gospel. Hopefully by the habits that you put on, by the character you are exhibiting every day. You should draw people to you by your habits and your character. And then when they get there, why are you different? Why is your religion different? Why is your God different than my God? And I'll say, because you have no God. I serve the only God. You want to hear about him? Because I got news. I got news. So I had that question for you. You know, what's the role of the church? Anybody got about a book, chapter, verse for that? Anybody got one? Come on. Scott, tell me one. I would say I know that, but tell me why. So you must teach. So the role of the church. Anybody else got anything else? The role of the church? Okay. I think it was great. I wrote three, and one of them was the Great Commission. And what Denise is talking about, most of you all know, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. I can't do that if I'm not submissive, obedient, ready for good works, maligning of no one, peaceful, gentle, and considerate for all men. Because I'm going to be dragging myself along. I'm going to be wasting the best part of me. My best part of my witness will be wasted if I'm going and I'm dragging all these evil parts of me behind. I need to shuck those and start on. Another one, Matthew 5:16. Everybody knows that one, right? Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Here's a one that I really love, and anybody who knows this, 1 Peter 2:9 and 10. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation of people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God, and you have not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. I can change if there's something in it for me. I really can. I've done it before. I have changed my ways. I have set goals. I have made my body and my mind do things that I wanted because I knew there was something in it for me. And that realization that I am a chosen people, a royal priesthood, but my responsibility as a member of this church is to proclaim the excellencies of Him who called me. I look a little false if I'm dragging all these other character qualities around with me. And I think that's what Titus was being told by Paul. Teach these people that when they leave their churches and when they leave their homes, if you're not different than the world will have nothing to do with you. They would care nothing about you. And I know that's true. I know that's true. I've had enough disappointments when I thought it was time to share the gospel. And people go, you know, Christians aren't any different than the rest of us. And I so boldly said, yeah, but I'm different. They go, no, you're not. You could have killed me. You could have killed me. And I would have been happy to have it over right then. I don't know how y'all, what kind of conflict you have in your life, what kind of people you run up against. But if they're not challenging some of that dross that you're carrying around, maybe you don't, but I do. If you're not challenging and saying, boy, the log in your eye is pretty big, Buster. I get some of that. Boy, that shames me. That brings me to my knees. Not literally, but I get that. That's the hurry. Now I'm going, look who I was. I need to get there faster. I need to get there faster. I need to be worthy of the calling. I would say there's unsaved people in this room who need to know what it's like to put off that old and put on the new. And that's between you and God right now because I've been praying about you all day long, hoping that you would have the courage to change, to give that old man a look, that old lady a look, that girl you were, a look and say, am I so much different? Have I really changed? Have I moved forward in faith and strength? Am I a warrior or am I a wuss? Jeez, I shouldn't have said that. Am I strong, brave, and forward-thinking? Is my vision the same as Christ's? The world, one neighbor at a time? You know, I'm not asking you guys to change the culture. Change yourself first. The church will be mighty. Change yourself first, and your neighbor will at least be afraid of you. Yeah, I read that somewhere. Jesus didn't come just to save us from our sins. He came to make us dangerous. I love that. The sword's a big, fat book with about a billion words in it. But once you master it, and it's changed your life, you can really be something different. And I'm proud of what Christ is doing in my life, but I am so eager to not be a hypocrite. I'm so ready to get done with being an unfinished work. What I'm saying there is I'm ready to go to heaven. And I'm not sure I'm ready, but I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. So y'all need to give this a thought. I'm going to pray that I guess we got